Through faith and by faith, Hebrews 11. Looking at the achievements of faith from the perspective of persuasion and credence. Part 7. Abraham. By Randy Pritz. Part of the So Great Salvation series. Today's text. By faith, Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac. And he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that in Isaac thy seed shall be called, accounting that God was able to raise him up, even from the dead, from whence also he received him in a figure. By faith, Abraham. Verse 17. This is our second occasion to consider the faith of Father Abraham. The first paths was surveying his faith, mostly from advantage of going out, sojourning as a stranger in a foreign land, based upon a promise made by God that this would be the land his seed one day would be receiving. At the time, all Abraham had to stand on was a promise. He had not received the child yet. That wouldn't come for another couple decades. As far as his descendants from that first seed taking possession of that promised land, it was a promise that would not materialize for them for another 400 years or so. When we talk about faith being the substance of things hoped for, clearly the promise being fulfilled was the thing hoped for. What, though, was the substance that Abraham relied upon, enough to step him out into his pilgrimage, endure what he did, sacrifice what he did, live on the move as he did? That is the type of substance in our considerations that we're looking for. Hope is one thing, probably the most important thing. Hope is not the only thing, however. It's more like the direction on the map you want the car to go. Substance is the fuel in the car that will get hope there. Faith is the substance of things hoped for. In our text today, we are at the point where the first part of God's promise to Abraham has now recently been fulfilled. The boy Isaac is likely in his early teens. We won't go back over all the faith-building and corrective things that it took God to perform to get Abraham and Sarah just this far. Problem, as we join Abraham and Isaac, now on the trek up the mountain side of the mountain, is Abraham is being told by the angel of the Lord to sacrifice this promised seed on a fiery wood altar when they get to the mountaintop. Genesis 22. We could read into God's intentions for this test one or two ways. Either it is a test of Abraham's obedience. Will he blindly do anything God tells him? Or is it a test of Abraham's faith? What has been promised? What has everything that God has taught Abraham up to now meant? The discernment of what's going on here is vital to the Christian faith. Most all other religions, including Judaism, break off from us at this point. When he was tried, verse 17. Child sacrifice appears to have been quite common in the folk religions of that day. Many a blind, obedient patron would sacrifice their children to their gods to prove to all their dedication and obedience. Why would we be asked to respect Abraham more than them if this was the intent this God Jehovah was looking for? Now, wait a minute. Hold up, some might say. Who says that God even tests us? What kind of God does that? Doesn't God want all of his children just to live in peace and happiness? Well, some people think it's so. Other people think that testing is all that God does. They are angry with him because that is all he seems to ever do. Who wants to have faith in a God who is only about all that? Surely, there has to be a middle ground where God, for the most part, leaves us to be, but occasionally he throws us a curveball to straighten us back up. Especially for the saints that claim to love and obey this God of gods the most, his redeemed and adopted children. There's also that line of reasoning that says, if God is a God that knows all things, what then is the purpose of there being testing? I think that as Christians, we have to soon get over this idea of God testing, because there's every evidence in the Bible that he frequently is doing this. And there's absolutely no evidence in it that he actually does not. That is why I have to caution believers when they express, you know, something along the lines of, the devil is pressing down on me, brother, you know, sifting me, oppressing me. Or they say, pray for me, brother. We have to put the devil back in his place. Friend, it very well could be the devil being used to do the pressing. Maybe so, maybe not. But is God allowing for it for the purpose of testing? But why the testing? Doesn't God all-knowing already know? Simple answer, yes. God already knows. Now's the time for Abraham and Isaac and us to know as well. He that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son. Verse 17. So is God's intention to test the blind obedience of a believer or the substance of things that they've hoped for, their faith? If you are of the obedience of Abraham persuasion, this phrase would be read as the ultimate virtue. And I'm surprised that this persuasion's many earthly congregants don't seek to emulate Abraham's obedience, if that's what it is, and offer up their own children. After all, isn't the proof positive of having the ultimate faith, absolute blind and loyal obedience? Why is it that Moses did not take his firstborn with him up that mountaintop to prove to us his similar to Abraham's faith? Many a sermon on this text wittingly portrays the faith of Abraham in this way. Ah, if we could only be this way, willing to sacrifice whatever it takes to finally please our testy God. It should be called then the resolve of Abraham, not the faith of. Let's turn this around before we go too far down that awkward religious rabbit hole. Let's ask, what is the substance Abraham is relying upon? What are the evidences? What has God built into Abraham now that wasn't built into him when this journey and sojourning all first began? Of whom it was said that in Isaac shall thy seed be called. Verse 18. When was this statement spoken? By whom? It was first said by God in Genesis 17:19, long before Isaac's birth. It was said again by God five chapters later, Genesis 21:12, at the party for the young Isaac's weaning, the first sign of Hagar's son Ishmael mocking. God has spoken this at least twice. Are we to suppose that Abraham didn't hear and doesn't know? We've spoken quite a bit about God's word framing the ages. God frames man and the ages of man. The man reacts, positive or negative. Abraham knew this previous word and had long relied upon it. Now suddenly, in addition or building upon that, his faith is being framed by a flurry of words all of a sudden spoken directly to Abraham. Like never before this time of Abraham have we had so much speaking by God going on in the Bible. The new additional word builds upon the old. It clarifies it. It helps pinpoint the direction God is about to take towards fulfilling that overarching promise. The promise being made to Abraham is not just about him having a son. It is about the long trail mapped out between Adam to Isaac and Isaac to Christ. Abraham can rely upon this additional word because he is familiar and has relied upon that word given by Noah, who was familiar himself and had relied upon the word given him by Enoch, by Cain and Abel, by Adam and Eve. The previous word, in other words, is framing the next. Each part of this mounting word has been tested out. The elder's faith involved proven by trial, so that it is evident to us that this is not just one man's or woman's blind hope. It is the proven and substantiated hand of God moving them towards a good report, which can be used to build and move us all the more further towards his redeeming goal. Each stage in that direction is crucial unto the next. Had this test been asked of Noah, I'm not sure how he would have reacted, because God had not yet spoken to the age before or after to the extent that he has now with Abraham. Look at it this way. Noah had his test. Boy, howdy. Noah learned a lot about God by the end of his test, and because of that, so have we. Abraham, as well, has learned much about God from what he knew of Noah's test. Now God has armed Abraham with that knowledge and oh so much more. Abraham has the additional years and years of relying on God for his sojourning, the experience of jumping the gun and trying to produce a son on his own through Hagar, and so much more. Abraham has learned patience, to name but one of many spiritual traits. Now he has that promised seed. Fairly soon that promised seed will begin to produce more seeds. Each of these seeds will begin having seeds of their own. Someday, as Abraham hopes and believes and sees from afar off, those many, many seeds will stand at the doorsteps of a land that he and his wife have already sojourned all this time. From God's tremendous hand, receive that land as their own. As the author said of wife Sarah, quote, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Verse 11. That same could be said of husband Abraham. Then this phrase is key to any promise of God ever received. Accounting that God was able to raise him up, verse 19. Here's the one place that Abraham, who already has been had righteousness accounted or imputed to him since Genesis 15. Now, perhaps he didn't understand yet or was guessing, God maybe having to raise Isaac from the dead. If the prophecy to Adam and Eve in the garden is known, Eve's messianic seed is bit in the heel by the serpent. Does Abraham see Isaac as that prophetic seed? If so, then Isaac would need to come back from that deadly strike and crush the serpent's head. In the actual fulfillment of this, that's exactly what transpires between Messiah and the serpent. God sacrifices his only begotten son. The serpent bites its deadly blow. Messiah is raised from the dead. Satan's government and control and power on earth at that second coming are crushed. I can't think of anything that Abraham would have been told up to now that would tell him that Isaac is not this Messiah, other than the promised land will not be received for another 400 years. If Abraham does not think that Isaac is the Messiah, only the trunk of a fruitful line from which Messiah will eventually proceed, then there's an entirely different explanation that we have to conceive. Let me take a moment to explain why I believe that Abraham is conscious of the messianic implications behind this immediate test atop the mountain here with Isaac. The first reason is my belief that in the framing words standing firm throughout the ages. God doesn't say something in the distant past, fulfill it in the distant future, but leave it silent and to wither. In the in-between, he says the thing, plants it as a seed or a blueprint. It grows, it builds on it. Every word in addition to that is interrelated and compounding upon the foundation already laid. The framing word as a unified whole will not return to God void. It will accomplish exactly the thing for which it was first sent out to do. Second thing, the author's use of the phrase from whence he also received him in a figure. Figure here is meaning parable. also gives us a hint that the occurrence has a twofold meaning. One would have to believe that God intended for Abraham to understand this one way, what it meant to sacrifice and receive back his son, and the rest of us in the future to understand this in an additional way. What it would mean for God to sacrifice and receive back his only begotten son. Else suggests that Abraham at the time was also aware of the twofold meaning and rely upon it for Isaac's outcome. The third thing I offer here as evidence is the commandment, thou shalt not murder. Granted, the commandments of Moses are 400 years away from being written yet. The word of God concerning Cain and Abel, and later the defiant bragging of the murderous Lamech, certainly would be heavy on Abraham's conscience. Add to this the existence of several predating moral codes having the prohibition of murder in common. These reasons and more lead me to the belief that righteous Abraham has at least partial recognition of God's truest intention. So, Abraham and Isaac reach the top. The adolescent asks his dad, where is the lamb for the burnt offering? 22 verse 7. The response is, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. Genesis 22, 8. How does Abraham know that? Why would he say that if he thought Isaac was the sacrifice God would provide? Surely, Abraham is steeped in this answer all the way up the mountain. For because thou hast done this thing. What has Abraham done? He's not spared his son. Spared him from what? If we focus too much on the resolve of Abraham's obedience, then we lose sight that not spared Isaac is likely never again to speak to or be anywhere near to his father for fear of him. You know, what father would place his own obedience and position with God over his own child's, who trusted him, his child's well-being in life? If we focus on the faith of Abraham and God's continuous and framing word, then Abraham tells Isaac immediately after this, here's what we know now from this test of the two of us. We know Isaac is not the Messiah. The future Messiah is yet to come from the future seed of Isaac. God's solemn sacrifice will feel to him as sorrowful and heavy as it did to me, can now be said by Abraham. His sons staring down at the jaws of death and tremoring anguish will be just as real as yours, Isaac. I was willing, you were willing to undergo this, I guess, at least as far as we had to. Don't know for sure that I could have gone through with it, Isaac. What a fearful thing. But thankfully, son, we both know now that the job that has to be done by God. It won't be done by either of us. From then on, they both could call that place Jehovah Jireh. Jehovah will see to it. See to what? See to his unconditional promises. See to the ever-expanding but central framing of his word throughout the ages until there be one such Messiah. The blessing brought forth to all the world. For the two of them, the hope one day of Messiah still is out there afar, but now in their faith has so much more substance. God is not at all through adding to them and to us even more substance yet. Praise be to God, most merciful and almighty.